Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Welcome to the next installment of the Outside Podcast on the Liberty Ballers Network. I am your host, Adil Royster, Chill Ride, Chill Vibes. Once again, recording on location at my regular 9-to-5 office. I should be eating lunch right now, but I'm not because I wanted to do this podcast with Steve Lippman because there's a lot of Josh Richardson for Spencer Dinwiddie talk coming out of Liberty Ballers and Sixers Twitter. So Steve penned a column last week, and yeah, we're just going to get into this. I've got Steve on the line. How you doing, my friend?
I'm great, man. Thank you so much for having me again. It's good to talk to you, and I hope you do have time to get something to eat at some point.
I'm sure I'll like sneak out or something, just grab
some
Wawa, because it's literally right up the street.
Okay, good.
Yeah, exactly. Wawa is the best. I'm sorry. To all the 7-Elevens and the Sheetz people or whatever. Like, just
no. Not even close. Yeah. Just,
no, Wawa is king. I'm sorry.
Yes.
And you can come in my mentions if you want to. It doesn't matter. You're just going to be wrong. Yeah, there's been a lot of Richardson for Dinwiddie talk, and you kind of made the point that it makes all too much sense, but I kind of want to start with when the sign and trade, I should preface, the sign and trade for Jimmy Butler happened, Jason Richardson was kind of the focus of the trade. It was kind of like, oh, we're losing Jimmy Butler, but hey, we're getting Josh Richardson, who's younger and can kind of do the same things.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at it, you have to start from where the Sixers were at that point, which is that they were sort of getting lucky in that Butler decided to go to a team that didn't have the cap space to outright sign him. So in order for him to get onto the Heat's roster, they had to work a sign and trade. For whatever reason, the Sixers decided that they were done with Butler, and obviously that is sort of bandied about every night on social media. But at the time, it was like, if Butler's out the door, getting a guy like Josh Richardson who can do a number of things and is a good defender and all that, it seemed like a perfectly fine worst-case scenario, because otherwise you're just losing a guy for nothing. So
for nothing.
I didn't think it was bad to get him at the time. You know, the rest of it sort of ended up putting him behind the eight ball.
And there's always that whole thing when anybody has a high-priced free agent and they're going for, like, a new contract. There's always the, oh, get what you can for this guy if he's already got one foot out the door. That's why I'll never understand why is Jimmy Butler hatred the right word? Because, like, he already had a foot out the door anyway. So, like, whatever.
There's so many different ways that people, you know, the answer is that we'll never really know what exactly it was that, like, was it Butler who made up his mind that he's just not coming back and it's over? Or was it the Sixers who said, you know, we're out of the Jimmy Butler business, which is what Woj said. And I think it's probably somewhere in the middle where Simmons and him was a sort of imperfect fit because they both want to control the ball. And the Sixers did not want to move off of Ben for a guy who was probably 6 years older than him. And I understand it. I of course wish they could have worked it out, because I just think that Butler provided such a needed element to this team and alongside Embiid. But, you know, clearly that's over now, and they ended up with Richardson, and he was obviously much better than nothing to get him.
That leads me to this question. Where did the Sixers go wrong exactly with Josh Richardson? Because he kind of had an off year considering what he was in Miami.
You know, so you look at Josh, and it's like I sort of have empathy for him in one way, which is like, in the right situation, Philly fans would just love this guy. Like,
yeah, 100%.
Richardson is a dog on the court. He guards with his all of his life. Like, he plays hard. Like, he seems like everybody likes him in the locker room. The problem was that the way the roster was constructed made Josh the only guard in the starting lineup. And at that point, when Josh is the only guard in the starting lineup, you need that guard to be able to do a bunch of different things offensively. You
right.
need them to be able to get to the rim and make free throws and find guys on a short roll and to hit open threes. And Richardson is an average, sort of at best, three-point shooter. So, like, we were not able to appreciate him for what he's good at because he just wasn't the guard that this team needed. But I don't think that's his fault. Like, I feel like the fault is on the Horford signing and on not modernizing the roster around him.
Everything always comes back to the Horford signing.
I know. But, like, if you look around the league, look at, like, Pat Beverly and look at Marcus Smart. Like, they're offensively limited guards who play key roles on good teams by being great defenders and great team players. So, like, I really think that it's a shame the way that he was surrounded on this team, because I don't think that Sixers fans were able to appreciate a guy like him, because he really is a useful player. And I'm sure for the rest of his career, he's going to be useful on teams going forward.
And you talk about offensively, Jay Rich as the only guard, he was asked to do a whole lot. Just through Synergy Sports, their numbers have him below average in transition and just average in the half court. But somehow he was excellent in off screens or isolations. What? I don't know how that checked out.
I know. I guess I'm not sure. We have seen him at times go and get a bucket. Like, he's actually very proficient in the mid range, which is, like, the Sixers didn't need more guys that were very good in the mid range.
We have plenty of that.
Exactly. They've got enough guys that need to be close to the basket. So that's another part of it that, like, as much as Richardson didn't help the Sixers spacing, the Sixers other spacing didn't help him operate, you know?
No.
And he's not a particularly quick decision maker. So when your wing guys are him and Harris, they're both sort of methodical guys with the ball. So it can be a lot of over dribbling. And I mean, there are numbers that definitely like him. And I'm sure, like, the defensive metrics like him too. And I loved coming into the year, the defensive trio of him and Simmons and Embiid. And I don't think that he proved us otherwise on the defense. It just ended up being what we needed out of that position.
And I think what was jarring for a lot of people, especially me, like, I knew how really good Josh Richardson was on the defensive side of the ball. And when I look at what he did offensively, it kind of left a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth. It's like how good he was defensively didn't quite offset how average he was offensively. Does that make sense? Is that something that you kind of struggle with too?
Yeah, I mean, when I was just thinking about the opening game of last season, which feels like a decade ago now, but it was us against the Celtics. And coming into the year, there were, like, two big things. It's like, you need to solve the backup center thing, and you need to get guys who can guard a quick ball handler better. And in that game, they beat the Celtics by double digits, and Richardson and Thibault combined to, like, hound Kemba Walker all game. He had a terrible game. And Embiid only had to play, like, 24 minutes. So I remember coming out of that game, and it was like, wow, maybe the moves they made were just the exact right things that they needed to solve those two problems. At the end of the day, you know, the season bore out that what they needed more than anything was a guard who could get a bucket at the end of the shot clock at the end of a game. Which, you know, all of that sort of adds up to make it much harder to appreciate things that Richardson is good at, because the things he's good at, the team already had surrounding him. You know, there are enough defenders on the team that they really needed. That's when you look at a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie, who's sort of the opposite in terms of skill sets as Richardson.
So let's say that Richardson isn't traded before we get into the conversation mm-hmm. of actually trading him. Is there any way that he could still have that best case scenario role? And if he can, what exactly would that be?
So, you know, I think about that, and I think about, you know, who are the guys that might be available? The Sixers have no cap room, so anybody that's going to be out there is going to have to be had via a trade. And you need to do some addition by subtraction with the Horford thing. If they're able to you know, incentivize a team enough, like Oklahoma City for Chris Paul, and you have Chris Paul in the starting lineup, and Chris Paul is going to control the ball, and he's a good shooter and all that sort of stuff, maybe then you can keep Richardson on the team and he can play a much more secondary or even tertiary role. The problem that they get into, though, is that Richardson is like the only guy with a positive value contract. So
yes,
it's hard to swing those other trades without sending Thibault, without sending Milton, without attaching Richardson to Horford to make something happen. You know, it's really tough. So the answer is yes. I do think that there is a way that if they are able to pull off enough trades that are incentivized with picks and stuff, that he could be appreciated on this team. I don't think that that's likely. I think that they end up needing to move Richardson because he's their best trade chip that they're willing to give entering the last year of his deal.
I guess that kind of answers my next question. What's more likely to happen? Horford is traded with, you know, the 21st pick or some combination of second round picks, or is Horford traded with Richardson?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think that I would put money on both of them not being on the Sixers next year.
Wow.
I think that, you know, we were just talking about Richardson, and I think that he's entering the last year of his deal. These owners are not going to go further into the tax to extend Richardson. And this is just, you know, they need something in their starting lineup and in their guards on the team that he just doesn't provide, which is, you know, sort of what it is. And Horford, I know that he's got a bad contract. I don't think there's any way that they can sell bringing him back after this year. I think that, like, in terms of Embiid, in terms of the players who matter on this team, they sort of need to find a way out of that. And I think that, honestly, they should do it sooner rather than later, because maybe a team will say, he's Al Horford, we know who he is. This year was Mulligan, it was a bad fit. The contract's only two more years. You know, he can contribute to winning in the right situation. So, yeah, my guess would be that both of them are not on the Sixers.
And it has to be said that nobody's really going into the luxury tax probably for the next couple of seasons, at least. Maybe at next year for sure, because – we don't really know yet how many games are going to be played yet. Like, it could be anywhere between, I guess, 60 and 70.
Yeah, that's the other part of it that makes Josh all the more likely to get traded, is that, like, these balloon contracts with Horford and Harris might be even harder to move given the financial state of the new CBA and of the league. And, you know, there's just a lot of uncertainty right now. So a guy like Josh, who's on such a, you know, fair contract, I feel like that's about what he should make at that $10 million. I feel like that makes him a very appealing guy on a lot of teams.
Now let's talk about the swap.
Yeah.
Richardson for Dinwiddie. We'll start straight up and then we'll move into, like, semantics later on. Here's what I do like about Dinwiddie. According to Synergy Sports, almost, so 0.889 points per possession in pick and roll, and then 0.951 points per possession in ISO. That's not too shabby.
Yeah.
For a team that desperately needs to run more pick and roll and have somebody that's more of a shot creator.
Yeah. Spencer Dinwiddie, I mean, Sixers fans know him. He always kills the Sixers. I feel like this
every time.
Every time we play him, he just lights us up.
Spencer Dinwiddie, Marcus Smart, two players that are only good against the Sixers.
Exactly. What I love about Dinwiddie is that he gets to the line a lot. You know, I think that he gets to the line about seven times a game. And when you think of him and Embiid, if you can just guarantee 15 free throws a night between those two guys, I think that would be a really nice thing to have. And if you look at his basketball reference stats and you see 30% from three, that's obviously not great.
But that's something I don't like. That's something I'm not a fan of. Course.
I think that he was doing a good amount of jacking there after Kyrie went out. And if you delve a little deeper into his numbers, his catch and shoot numbers from three were much better. And his, you know, his numbers with one dribble rather than, you know, more than one, which just sort of shows how the offense moves a bit quicker. It's not completely perfect, but he's entering the last year of his deal too. And just as a guy who can handle the ball and, you know, he's a good theoretical fit with Simmons, because they can, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie can work on and off ball. So while Ben has it at the nail or at the free throw line, he can find Dinwiddie. So, yeah, there's a lot to like about him. And given their respective situations, that's what I feel like helps it look like such a good fit for both teams.
That's what I kind of got hung up on too, just the percentages. And then after I saw the percentages, I kind of broke it down. I was just like, wait a minute. They went from having Kyrie and KD to not having either of those guys, and they switched coaches midseason.
Right.
So Dinwiddie probably did a lot of jacking, plus the fact that he's only got 1 year left on his deal, plus a player option. He's trying to, as we like to say on the podcast, secure the bag.
Right.
So when I broke that all down, like, I felt much better about him, and I definitely felt really good about something that you pointed out, that last year he averaged 7+ free throw attempts per game. It's very promising for me.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, then you look at the two teams and why it makes sense. You know, it's easy for Sixers fans to look at the trade machine, and if it says the trade is successful, it's like, well, there you go. Horford to Butler. There it is. It's done. But if you look at, you know, look at Brooklyn coming into this year, and what do they have? They have a ton of offense. You know, they have Kyrie and Durant, who are both going to get probably close to 20 shots a game. Caris LeVert is there. I mean, they would probably trade him in the right deal if you get a Bradley Beal or something. But other than that, he's going to be there. And he's another high-volume shooter. What they don't really have is a guard to defend opposing
anyone.
Right. So you've got Kyrie, who's not a good defender. LeVert's not a good defender. Dinwiddie, for, you know, as much as I like him, he's not an accomplished or particularly committed defender. So it seems like a guy like Richardson, who doesn't need a lot of shots, who doesn't need really anything, he can just float around and scrap for offensive rebounds and just dog the other team's starting guard. Whereas the Sixers would be getting a guy who sacrifices some defense, but they've got defense everywhere. So they can just get a guy who can get a bucket and who can find others and get to the line himself. I don't think that it might not exactly be one for one. You know, you might see a second rounder coming here or there, or a second round swap, something like that. But I think the nucleus of it makes a lot of sense.
I won't stand for too much Caris LeVert slander on this podcast, but I do agree with you the fact that he's not great defensively.
He's great, though. He's
like, I love he's me. Some, be, I love me legit. Some Caris LeVert.
Yeah.
Were Dinwiddie to become a member of the Sixers, this could be a really stupid question, but he would be in the starting lineup right away, right?
Yeah, I mean, you wonder what else happens this offseason, because I don't think you're just seeing one move. You know, like, if the Sixers figure out a Chris Paul thing with Horford and with other stuff, including picks and maybe young guys, is your new backcourt Paul and Dinwiddie? I mean, now you're getting into fantasy land sort of stuff. But, yeah, I do think
this is very NBA 2K trade.
Exactly. No, I do think that Dinwiddie's a starter there, and I think you see a lot of Shake Milton off the bench.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You brought up the point about Dinwiddie defensively. And with Simmons, who was first team all defense last year, and with Embiid, who has been defensive NBA all defense several times in his career. Is how much of an issue really is that?
I honestly don't think much. He's not like a liability. Teams aren't picking on him. You know, it's not like Isaiah Thomas, the Celtics,
He's not JJ Redick out there is what I'm trying to say.
No, I mean, Dinwiddie's 6'6" too, and he has long arms. So, you know, if Doc Rivers can get buy-in from him, I don't see any real issue in terms of putting him on the easiest assignment on the other team. Now, that's especially helpful and especially doable if the team is able to keep Thybulle this summer or this whatever month it is, this offseason.
This offseason.
Yeah.
We brought it up, and we have to talk about the numbers since we're talking about the luxury tax and all like that. Jason Richardson, he's on the books for $10.9 million this year, and then he's got an $11.6 million player option next year. Dinwiddie is $11.4 this year with a $12.3 player option next year. So monetarily, it's an even swap within the cap rules where right. Like, you go in the trade machine, Dinwiddie for Richardson, bang, you're good.
Right.
That's not going to be enough, is it? I don't think so.
I don't think so. I mean, the Sixers have 5 picks in this upcoming draft. I really don't think this is a first round pick like that you need to attach that much to Richardson. Whether they throw in like a lottery ticket like Zaire Smith, who brings them more defense, whether they just go into those 4 second rounders, you know, they've got 2 very attractive ones in the 30s. They've got 1 in the 40s and 1 in the 50s. I don't, especially with this front office and what they've shown, I have no problem with them attaching second rounders to get better players on the team because I have no confidence in them using the second rounders.
Yeah.
So I think that probably a second rounder changes hands there from the Sixers, but I don't think it's a ton more, you know, their points per game is very different, but in terms of affecting winning on the court, there's a good chance that Brooklyn might, you know, be a fan of Richardson and not be too disillusioned by sort of a crappy season in Philadelphia overall.
Which second round pick would you be willing to part with? Because I don't know if I would trade that really early second round. I think it's like 34 or something like that.
I think I would do the one in the 40s. I would do that one and maybe a future one. You know, the Sixers have a ton of picks in the holster from years past and trade past. So yeah, I would, you know, it doesn't have to be this year, but yeah, I wouldn't give up either of the 30s picks because I do feel like they could be packaged to move up to later in the first round if there's somebody the Sixers like there. So I wouldn't touch those, but I would, you know, any of the ones after that or in following years, I would definitely look into.
You brought up Zaire Smith. He kind of has a little like J. Rich in him. Especially right. Defensively, I feel like this might be too much, but maybe there's no way Brooklyn says no to this. So Jason Richardson plus Zaire plus like a pick in the 40s for Dinwiddie. Is that too much, you think?
For me, that's too much. You know, Zaire, I really feel bad for Zaire because like he's just had the worst luck ever.
So do
I. Being drafted by the Sixers. I mean, it's really tough. I liked him out of college. I thought that the trade on draft night was a perfectly like good value trade. It didn't end up well, obviously, because Mikal Bridges is good and Zaire just didn't get any playing time. I don't foresee any playing time for him really this year, unless a lot of stuff moves around, but he's a guy who projects as a really good defender and an okay shooter, depending on how that develops. But yeah, I think that he's a lottery ticket. Like, I think that teams around the league might ask for him as a sweetener in, you know, like your Horford trade and if they're possibly able to move off of Harris, which I highly doubt. But I think that he's a lottery ticket. I would not include him in that deal. I think that I would say it's one or the other in terms of the second rounder or him. I don't think that he's in line for any minutes really this year on Doc Rivers Sixers, barring big injuries, but yeah.
Catastrophic injuries. Yeah.
So I would expect him to be elsewhere, whether that's attached to somebody else. You know, there's a lot of moving around I think the Sixers need to do.
Josh Richardson has been known as a good locker room, good character kind of person. And with a new coach, you kind of need those guys. And especially with the Sixers having Embiid and, you know, this may or may not be a thing, but Embiid likes to have, you know, his friends in the locker room. We saw it with Jimmy Butler. We kind of saw it with J.J. Redick and Luke and Bob Mute, players like that. Spencer Dinwiddie, like, I don't know too much about his character, and this is part of a mailbag question that we got. Mm-hmm. He's chosen to represent himself as an agent, and they're just a couple of red flags with me about that. And I'm just thinking to myself, ooh, how much in his head is this guy?
You know, I'm starting to remember from months ago, he was getting like super into Bitcoin and he wanted his contract in Bitcoin, which is definitely like a strange thing, but you know, I don't understand the first thing about Bitcoin. More power to you, whatever you want to do.
Sure.
I think that him representing himself is a bold move, definitely, but you've seen it happen in the NFL where players have done that and made it work and gotten good guaranteed money. So I think, you know, athletes having more ownership over their careers is a good thing. I just think he should be careful because I wouldn't want to see the league taking advantage of him. In terms of his personality in the locker room, I don't know a ton about that. You know, I know that he was part of the recruiting effort to get Kyrie into Brooklyn or to get them a meeting with Brooklyn. He doesn't have anything that sticks out other than being a bit strange and mercurial, but yeah. I think that, in terms of the culture in the Sixers locker room, that has to be on three guys, which is Doc Rivers, Embiid, and Simmons. So mm-hmm. I need the two of those young players to really come into their own as leaders. So when a guy who's like Spencer Dinwiddie, who's coming into the locker room, he's going to have to know how it goes and how, you know, how the culture is going to develop there. So that is a big improvement that I will definitely be looking for from the two of them this season, because it's getting past the point where they're young players, where it's like, no, you guys are the stars and you need to really take control of the franchise.
You guys really need to have voices because, right. Yes, we understand that Tobias is the oldest starter.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I don't think he's that comfortable in that kind of a role at all.
I mean, I love Tobias and like everything that he's doing socially and politically. And I think he's like a wonderful guy to have in the locker room and on the team, and that he shows a lot of like good vibes in terms of the team's togetherness. And
I would love to have Tobias on the podcast.
He's great. But he shouldn't be like the leader of the team. Like you need that to be your best players. Like I feel like more ownership has to be on Embiid and Simmons at this point.
I would agree.
Yeah.
The new coach, Doc Rivers, coming in, there's going to be all this, again, new coach, and we're going to have possibly new players. Dinwiddie, Horford is going to be off the books, et cetera, et cetera. Like, with Dinwiddie on the roster, what kind of team could Doc kind of formulate, like, offensively?
It's interesting. You know, Doc, in his past, he's used a lot of different guys. He obviously coached Chris Paul and ran a ton of pick and rolls with him. Blake Griffin, so he's had sort of a – Tom West wrote something on Liberty Ballers recently about Blake and the way that he was using Blake as sort of a 6'10 playmaker, you know.
Had Tom on the podcast about it.
Right, which is similar to Ben Simmons. And, you know, he always has this archetype, it seems like in every team, Doc Rivers has this runoff screens shooter, you know, whether that's J.J. Redick or Landry Shamet or, you know, Eddie House back in the Boston days. I think that it's interesting to see where he's going to get that. You know, he usually wants a guy to get buckets off the bench. Now, maybe that's Shake Milton, or maybe it's somebody else. You know, Alec Burks did it at a pretty inefficient rate, but he's definitely going to be an option. Korkmaz, in terms of that runoff screen shooter, is an option, but he's a lot slower than guys like Redick and Shamet. He's a really good shooter, and I'm sure that he'll get minutes, but you need somebody pretty athletic, you know, even if it isn't vertically, horizontally, to run those kind of sets. And I think that they would love to reinvigorate the sort of dribble handoff game that Embiid had with Redick. I think that was a big part of the offense back then.
Yeah, I just need, over the next, like, month and a half or whatever it is of the offseason, I just want Shake and Furkan training in Camden and just doing nothing but sprints and just on the treadmill.
Right.
It's just cardio. You're just running around, coming off screens and shooting.
I'm with you.
Like the Reggie Miller training regimen. That's what I want them on.
Yeah. Shake's a baller. I really think that he's like legit. And I think that what we saw from him last year was real and it's only going to get better. So yeah, I believe in Shake.
Dinwiddie's making a lot more sense to me as the days go on.
Mm-hmm.
And your best educated percentage. And I know this is like ridiculous hot plate boiler talk kind of, but what's the percentage of chance he's actually in a Sixers uniform next season?
You know, it's hard because you look at it's Dinwiddie or it's any other player in the league. You know, so it's like when you weigh it like that, the percentage is probably
50-50.
Yeah, I mean, less. You know, it's like it's probably less because then you look at teams like Dallas. Like Dallas could use a guy like Richardson to guard the Commanders. And the Sixers could really use a guy like Seth Curry or a guy like Tim Hardaway. So there are other teams in the league that – and maybe the Sixers would want to stay out of conference, you know, and not do that sort of thing. I think, you know, Brooklyn may think about that more than the Sixers. But I think that there's a good chance that it happens. I think that it just makes a lot of sense for both teams that, you know, both teams have something the other wants. So I would, you know, maybe 30%. But I really think the percentage of Richardson getting moved for somebody that helps more is much higher and much higher than 50%.
Luka and Dinwiddie on the same team seems a little unfair to me, but whatever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, or just adding Josh next to Luka to guard the guys that he doesn't want to guard.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, I have kind of an issue with Tim Hardaway Jr.'s contract, but mm-hmm. I mean, right. I guess I wouldn't mind too hard if he's still shooting as well as he has in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas is an interesting Horford possibility because they were interested in him last year before the Sixers signed him. And, you know, it would really be trading, you know, in some ways a dollar for four quarters. You know, like you trade Horford with his big contract and then you get, you know, a Curry and a Hardaway or a Hardaway and a DeLon Wright, you know, that sort of thing. Where now the Mavericks have a guy who wants to defend centers and Horford, and the Sixers have guys who can do stuff with the ball from the guard position. So I would be interested in them too if the Chris Paul thing doesn't happen.
I feel like Dallas wanted Horford even before last year.
Yeah,
like, didn't they take definitely. A run at him before he signed with Atlanta?
Yeah, I think well, or in between Atlanta and Boston, I think they did.
Listen, Horford, people still want that Horford. People still want him. Yeah, we all hope so. Steve Lippman of the post, the column that he posted will be mentioned in the podcast description. Is Josh Richardson for Spencer Dinwiddie makes all too much sense. Makes hell of a lot more sense to me now that I talked to you about it and just more of the thinking about it. So appreciate you coming on and dropping the knowledge for everybody.
Thank you, buddy. It's great to talk to you. I appreciate it.
Likewise. Tell the fine people how to find you.
I'm at Steve J. Lippman on everything. And, you know, the podcast, just subscribe to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You'll get all of them.
Including the one that Steve is on. And I'll let him just give you the name because me saying it does it no justice.
It's the Gastroenteritis Blues with Dan Volpone and Emily Anderson.
Oh, it's fantastic. I'm still trying to get on that, by the way. It's
like, oh, my God. We'd love to have you.
Anytime. Listen, just throw up the bat signal and just listen.
Oh, my God.
I mean, me and Emily might go on like a bachelor riff. So if you
we
don't
just talked
that,
about this,
why.
We were just right. talking about the Bachelorette. So you're okay. You're right at home.
All right, cool, cool. I'm definitely down. So
let's get that on the books.
Let me know whenever.
Sounds good, buddy.
Thanks for coming on. See, appreciate the time.
Thank you, man. I'll talk to you later.
All righty.